Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you here this weekend. I'm glad to be here with you all, and we've got a bit of a show ahead of you. We have two guests. Well, hopefully, you never know if one might show up or one might not show up. That happened to me when I guest hosted the Al and Nathan Show earlier this week. But speaking of the Al and Nathan Show, you can find that and our show at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. You can find our podcasts up there as well in case you missed part of the show or you just started hearing us right now and want to hear some more of what we have done. And also, it shows a lot of love, giving them some hits on their website, because MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, well, they're the ones who bring you this show. If it weren't for them, this show wouldn't exist. And they actually protect us from people who don't want this show to exist, like some of their clients, for example. And, you know, management itself, sometimes they get on us about some of the content, but we still appreciate that they support us nonetheless. So you can check them out, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Again, that's the website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. And Al Nathan Show has AlNathan.com as his website, too. But they're also on Twitter, Main Street, at Main Street Radio, or at Al Nathan. And you can find them on Facebook under Main Street Radio Network, or on Wimkin, W-I-M-K-I-N, at Main Street Radio Network. Or on, for this show anyway, Getter, G-E-T-T-R.com, at Silk or Joe Show. And we also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. Well, we've had some ups and downs this week, haven't we? First, when we get into the mass shooting, and our thoughts and prayers are with the victims, it's really just tragic how these sorts of things happen. And the first thing we hear is a demand for gun control, gun bans, etc., from the same people over and over again. And it's always the same thing that won't do anything to stop these mass shootings from happening. For example, this particular one that happened in Maine, as it turns out, the shooter should not have had guns at all. By law, the man should not have had guns. He should have been stripped of his guns months ago. He had been committed to a mental institution, and according to the Gifford Center, you know, the left-wing think tank that's anti-gun, according to them, it's federal law that if you are committed to a mental institution, that means you'll lose your right to bear arms. So this man should not have had those guns, especially for the reason he was committed. He was committed because he was having these voices in his head that were telling him to shoot up places. And yet, despite that, despite being committed, which, you know, by law means you can't have your guns anymore, and that's according to the police, by the way, they, when describing the suspect, they mentioned his background and having been committed. So, you know, if it's something different than the definition in the law, then that's the police's fault for improper terms. But according to the federal law, though, if you've been committed to a mental institution, you lose your guns. So why did this guy still have them? Who knows? Maine is a Democrat state, though. That's a peculiarity here. You'd think they'd have some stringent gun laws or red flag laws or something in place, but apparently not in his case. And, you know, you hear a lot about Maine's senators, Susan Collins, a Republican, and Angus King, an independent, but Susan Collins, according to the Heritage Foundation, her voting record is actually more left-wing than one of the Democrat congressmen from Maine. And Angus King and the other Democrat congressmen tie, as far as their voting record goes. And, of course, the governor of Maine is a Democrat, so we can assume Maine is safely a Democrat state. In that case, though, why again is it that in the state of Maine, this guy gets committed for hearing voices telling him to shoot places up, he still gets to keep his firearms? That doesn't make much sense, does it? Because the left are the ones telling us that we got to follow their gun control regimens, yet here they are not enforcing their laws. Why is that? It's rather, again, a very strange dichotomy here. Out of one side of mouth, they're saying we need more laws to control people. Then out of the other side, they're saying, oh, by the way, we're not going to enforce those laws. It really makes this situation look suspicious, but it could also just be carelessness and lax prosecutions and total lack of coordination between local officials and the government when it comes to reporting mental health issues. And we've seen this sort of thing elsewhere. There was a mass shooting in 2017, for example, where the shooter entirely would not have had guns to shoot the to commit the crime if the Air Force had done its due diligence and told the FBI, hey, we discharged this guy in a way that means he can't have firearms, so make sure he doesn't get any. When the gun stores file the background checks with you all, refuse them. That didn't happen. So it could have been some slip-up like that. But there's other stuff that goes on, too, that may be involved here. The FBI, for example, really does love to create mass shooters and terrorists on its own just so they can have an arrest thing. And that started under Robert Mueller, you know, left-wing hero who was going to bring down Trump. Under Robert Mueller, shortly after September 11th attacks, the FBI went from catching people to this sort of crime prevention model. Well, how do you prevent crime if you don't know who the criminals are? Easy. You make them, which the FBI proceeded to do. For example, you had Khalil Abu Rayyan in 2016. Democrat ran FBI under Obama. They had an agent pretend to be a sympathetic Muslim who prompted this guy to make threats to commit a mass shooting, just so the FBI could arrest this mentally ill, deranged man. And instead of having him get the right treatment or steering him in that direction, the FBI just had one of their agents prompt this guy until this agent provoked the man to do something to get him arrested. And it's not the only time that they've done such a thing. We saw with the kidnapping plot against the Michigan governor, the Democrat Michigan governor. The FBI found a bunch of conservative activists, and instead of trying to, I don't know, downplay their radicalism or whatever, the FBI played along. The FBI gave them material and plans and all this to commit the kidnappings with. So, there was like one FBI agent for every individual that wasn't in the FBI that was involved in that plot. So the FBI really likes to manufacture its crimes. In fact, according to CNN, about like two-thirds of the 114 ISIS sympathizers arrested for plotting terror attacks under the Obama administration, 2014 to when Trump took over, two-thirds of that 114 were arrested because the FBI were posing as friends, sometimes co-conspirators, sometimes providing real guns to these people. So it raises the question then, any time that we get a mass shooting like this, what's the FBI's involvement? Actually, remember in Garland, Texas, when, what was it, Pam Geller, I think it was, they had that contest where who can draw the best Muhammad cartoon, and then two radical Islamists came in and tried to shoot the place up. Well, those radical Islamists, the FBI knew about them for years. There was an FBI agent taking pictures of them when they started the mass shooting. The FBI knew about all this stuff and did nothing. So it really raises the question again, when you have mass shootings like this, what did the FBI know? When did they know it? Because surely it's possible that this guy's records had been did indeed reflect that he couldn't buy a gun. The FBI just let him keep them or let him buy a new one anyway, and just so they could have this nice mass shooting on their hands. So, and, you know, maybe they wanted to move in and arrest the guy and say it was part of some crime prevention measure. Now, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just using this as an example of when you have the system fail as badly as it did here, it makes you wonder why, especially given what we know about what the FBI loves to do, which is manufacture crimes that are politically convenient to it. Right now, anti-gun, anti-right-winger, that's what the FBI is all about. You know, they're called... They decided Trump supporters and parents were terrorists. Are we going to find out that this guy is a Trump supporter? Is that going to be spreading on the news? We'll see. But if it is, that makes it even more suspicious that this had happened, that they had such a massive failure in allowing this guy to possess firearms when he shouldn't have had any. You can't trust the government and everything becomes a conspiracy theory, I think that means that you need quite a radical reform, and maybe you need to get rid of some people in office. Well, also in the bureaucracy, too, but they're so entrenched. Good luck with that. Because hypothetically, let's say it just comes out that this suspicion is, or this wild light of fantasy is correct, and the FBI is totally behind this 100%. We have documents, we have interviews, we have everything, right? The agents will get fired. Congress might hold a hearing or two, but no one will be held accountable. Maybe the FBI head Chris Wray will resign as a token head for the public's placation. But that's it. That's all that ever happens in these situations when the government screws up royally like this. no one's really held accountable. They just do it again later on. Probably the same people doing it again later on, too. Doesn't matter. Like, for example, the crimes that I just mentioned, the governor kidnapping plot, the radicalization of that one Muslim dude who otherwise wouldn't have done anything wrong, Khalil Abu Rayyan, or those the 114 ISIS sympathizers, the two-thirds of them that the FBI brought in by aggravating them and agitating them until they got to the point where they could be arrested. The FBI, no agents were fired for that. That behavior is encouraged. Why are we allowing this? Why is the FBI doing this sort of thing? Just for lack of crimes to pursue, they start manufacturing them? It's been going on for decades now. It's really entrenched into our system, and no one wants to talk about it. So, for lack of details on this mass shooter, other than the fact that he shouldn't have had a gun, and suspicious circumstances as to why he might have a gun given the FBI's track record, I guess we address it.
Children's series from Cocomelon, the new spin-off series starring JJ's lovable, sporty classmate and friend, Nina Reyes. Through the same style of three-minute songs and nursery rhymes that made Cocomelon a worldwide phenomenon, children will now experience stories of family, social, emotional learning, positivity, and healthy habits through the lens of a bilingual, multi-generational Mexican-American family, including some episodes fully in Spanish. Emmy-winning host and TV personality Liliana Vazquez.
It's so important for kids to see themselves represented on screen, and Nina's Familia does just that. Through Spanish nursery rhymes and culturally significant storylines, Nina's Familia is celebrating Latin culture and heritage and giving it a platform to be shared and enjoyed with the world.
Children and their families can tune into Nina's Familia on the Cocomelon YouTube channel now, with new episodes arriving weekly.
Some of the costliest mistakes that people make is that they don't review their coverage every year. The Medicare open enrollment period ends on December 7th, and what people don't realize is that Medicare plans change every year, just as your health needs change. When it comes to maximizing your benefits and saving money, me and my team use the 3 P's method, which I write about in my short book on Medicare. It's not that complicated. What are the 3 P's? The first is your providers. Who are the doctors that you see? The second P is your prescriptions. What medications do you take? Are they brand name or are they generic? What pharmacy do you like to go to? Is mail order okay? The final P is your priorities. What's important to you? For more information, you can visit the government's website, medicare.gov, or you can visit our website, askchapter.org. You can also call us toll-free at 888-487-2023. Me and my team would love to help you, and there's no charge to work with us.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve. It's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. We are now joined by Wayne Black. He is founder of Wayne Black & Associates, a security consulting firm. He was a Miami-Dade police detective and organized crime group supervisor for State Attorney Janet Reno, and was the personal security detail leader for former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. And his latest book is School and Security, a comprehensive guide for parents and educators on school security, protecting your children, and fostering a safe learning environment. Wayne Black, happy to have you on the program. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Well, glad to have you. So what do you make of this mass shooting that took place in Maine? I understand details are still coming in, but just based on what you've heard, what's your view on it?
Well, it's just terrible. You know, 22 dead, 50-plus injured, probably more dead expected. The first question that comes to my mind is, when he signed himself into a mental institution, why didn't they go grab his firearms like we do in Florida and like a lot of states do?
The police reporting on it said he was committed to and I know that firearms background checks, at least the federal ones, they always have that question on there: have you been sent to a mental institution lately? And especially for the reasons, because he was hearing voices telling him to shoot places up. Are there no red flag laws in Maine or anything like that?
Apparently not. There are in Texas, Florida, and most states. But look, this is what they should have done. So here's the big question. When they moved him out, when they let him go, is it because the insurance money ran out? Did they need more beds? Were they crowded? Why did they release him?
Mm-hmm. And just a lot of unanswered questions about how this situation developed. And is it possible that it was just an incredibly bad oversight on the part of any official involved that led to him, this information not being on his background, or no otherwise follow-up about his condition and his firearms and all that?
Well, I mean, he may have purchased that firearm before all this happened, but I can tell you, looking at the firearm, it's got an ACOG scope on the top. It's equipped. I mean, when I saw the picture of the way he was holding it, I knew that it was frightening. I knew he was professionally trained. You could just tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it comes out he was a firearms instructor, and I think either he was an instructor with the Army Reserve or he was in the Army Reserve. I heard both on the news, so I'm not sure exactly which it is. So definitely he had the training involved with this, and you know, you would think that that would warrant a more thorough follow-up after him committing himself for the reasons that he claimed.
Yep, he was asking for help, and we didn't give it to him, did we?
No, and that's the sad thing, too, because some of these mass shootings we've had have happened because we didn't take into account these cries for help. In 2017, there was a mass shooting where, like, the Air Force, they had discharged somebody and didn't tell anybody that part of the reason they discharged them would have disqualified them from owning a firearm, and then too late, we find out that he got one because he shot up a bunch of people. So it really makes us wonder just how, you know, with all these cries for gun control, how effective really is it when mistakes like this keep happening?
Yeah, it's not about gun control. It's about bad guy control. I'm afraid, I don't know if we'll ever learn this, but I'm afraid that my gut tells me that they moved him out of there because insurance money, or they didn't have enough beds and they had other people coming in, so he just got bumped out. He should have been permanently committed while they evaluated him. Well, the police or somebody went out and searched his house and his property and his car and recovered his firearms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just more problems with the system. And I guess part of this led to you writing your book, School and Security, a comprehensive guide for parents and educators on school security, protecting your children, and fostering a safe learning environment. Because, well, you know, this mass shooter, all this sort of failures happened with him. There's plenty of other people out there just waiting who the system has failed.
Yeah, I was on the phone this morning on a conference call with the National Sheriff's Association School Security Committee, and one of the members is a guy named Max Schachter, whose child was killed at Parkland. And that was totally preventable. You know, if we always say if it's predictable, it's preventable. So in large part, that's the reason I wrote the book. And really, it's for parents and grandparents. It's time for them to stand up and get school boards to do the right thing to protect their children.
Yeah, because even after, like, at all levels, and not just with potential mass shooters, but with other things too, we've seen schools just fail the safety of the students. Like, for example, in Loudoun County, Virginia, you had a student who was, raping people, and all they did was just move them about to another school district and didn't tell the parents, didn't tell anybody. And they even had the father of one of the victims arrested at a school board meeting like that. Like, the optics of that were good or something for them. And it's crazy what these schools try to get away with.
Yeah, that's just outrageous. So what I'm telling parents when I talk to them and I travel around the country and give speeches is, look, if the school won't do it, look at the checklist in the book. If the school won't do it, either run for school board yourself, get those people out of there, put your child in a private school, or homeschool them. You only have one child.
Mm-hmm. Now, when researching this book, were you shocked with what you learned about the state of our school systems and the security therein?
Well, sure. Before the book, I've been doing school assessments for the past probably 15 or 20 years. So I've seen everything from super tight private schools to wide open public schools. And after Parkland, I was triggered to write the book. I know some of the parents, I've interviewed them. Is just tragic, and I don't want it to happen again, which is why I put my assessment checklist, my guide, in the book.
Now, like a lot of these school districts that seem unprepared, well, I remember during 2020 as well, they had, in response to the Black Lives Matter movement's demands and increasing visibility, some schools just outright kicked out their police presence. I can't imagine that that's going to help the safety of the students at all.
No, it's just going to make it a soft target. You know, some schools are, quote, gun-free zones, right? Can you believe that? So, look, the only thing that's going to stop a school shooter with a gun is a police officer with a gun. That's all. Or a school resource officer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems that just part of this is just at least the individuals running the school or the school board, they feel that their rhetoric is more powerful than a bullet in some cases, like with the gun-free zone signs, like that's going to do anything. And like they say that having a police presence or having an armed teacher on school campus would just make the children feel unsafe or something. And so they just want to avoid any association with firearms, as if burying their heads in the sand about the firearm issue will somehow prevent a shooter from showing up.
Yeah, that's just not true. That's the parents trying to impose their feelings on the children. I can tell you that in schools that I've seen all over the country where they have an SRO, I see kids coming in the morning, they feel better, they study better, they get better grades. They're giving the SRO high five. He or she's playing basketball with the kids. They know him personally. And that SRO can detect observable concerning behavior, which is what causes kids maybe to decide to do something, bullying or whatever. But the SRO program is great, which is why it's required in Florida and Texas and some states that are really thinking about child safety over politics.
Mm-hmm. And I think it has another advantage, too, of allows the children to form a bond with someone who was in the police forces. So that would really help the image of the local police and help cooperation when they become adult citizens. Final word on this. 10 seconds. I guess I wasn't clear on what I meant. But anyway, Wayne Black, appreciate you being on the Silk Joe Show. His book, School and Security, A Comprehensive Guide for Parents and Educators on School Security, Protecting Your Children, and Fostering a Safe Learning Environment.
Just in time for Halloween, MTV introduces the original film, Benched to Death, a parody thriller which premieres Tuesday, October 17th. Benched to Death stars Lonnie Love, Carl Anthony Payne II, Quincy Brown, Lauren Lott, Jessica Lord, Andre Anthony, Dan Ganane, and Nico Tortorella. After learning their favorite reality show couples have broken up, an obsessive single woman and her BFF decide to kidnap the contestants and force them into a series of torturous games, all with the hopes of rekindling their favorite TV romances. Benched to Death, executive producer Will Packer.
Okay, don't tell anybody, but I've been known to get a little bit obsessed with some of my favorite TV personalities, their going-ons, and especially their relationships. And I know I'm not the only one. Whether you're a fan of reality TV or not, Binge to Death will have you jumping and laughing a lot.
Binge to Death premieres Tuesday, October 17th at 9 p.m., 8 Central, only on MTV.
This report is sponsored by After School Alliance. A million people are rallying for after school as part of the 24th annual Lights On After School, organized by the After School Alliance. The event shines a light on the many ways after school programs engage children and youth by making learning fun and providing educational and enriching activities. After school programs are especially important as students recover from the pandemic, but funding shortfalls have left nearly 25 million kids without the after school programs their parents want for them. Quality after school programs keep kids safe, inspire them to learn, and give parents peace of mind. Alliance Executive Director, Jody Grant.
Every day, after-school programs across our country help students discover their talents, build their confidence, and foster their creativity through enrichment and academic supports. As we continue to recover from the pandemic, it's essential that many more students and families have access to these programs. This year, 8,000 Lights On after-school events will focus on the benefits after-school programs provide.
Visit www.afterschoolalliance.org to learn more about Lights On After School.
A message from MyCataracts.com. September is Healthy Aging Month, and a recent survey led by Alcon, the global leader in eye care, found that cataract surgery gives millions of people the chance to turn back the clock on their vision. Dr. Netta Shammy says the results are compelling.
There are several exciting findings stemming from the Alcon Ion Cataract Survey. Post-cataract surgery, 90% of respondents report better vision, 71% report they have an improvement in quality of life, and about half feel they have the vision of someone younger.
Dr. Shammy performs more than 1,000 cataract surgeries every year and says many people do not know how cataract surgery works or that it can correct your vision.
Cataract surgery is the most frequently performed surgery on earth. The procedure is not painful and involves implanting a permanent lens implant into the eye. Before surgery, a person can choose from several lens options to fit their unique needs.
For treatment options and more information, go to MyCataracts.com.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny. When I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here this weekend. So, I've got to renounce something I said on the Alan Nathan Show during the week when it seemed like Tom Emmer was going to be the Republican nominee for House Speaker, and he was, but when it seemed like they were going to vote on him and possibly make him House Speaker, obviously instead they went with Mike Johnson, who appears to be far more conservative than Tom Emmer was. And I provisionally retract my Death to the GOP rant from the 24th of October, and that provision being how this Mike Johnson thing goes, because all GOP House members voted for him. The ones who opposed Jim Jordan, for example, voted for someone as conservative or even more conservative than Jim Jordan, which is hard to believe, unless Johnson is a wolf in sheep's clothing. We'll see, I guess. But it's always suspicious when 117 people who wanted a Soros spokesperson like Tom Emmer, best known for wanting Democrats to win all the presidential elections in perpetuity and allegedly having Democrat support if he were to become House Speaker, suddenly the same people who thought that was a great candidate decide they want Mike Johnson. And again, Tom Emmer also, he took money from the ESGs like BlackRock, you know, those Marxist groups out there that are responsible for corporations embracing Black Lives Matter while also not denouncing the atrocities committed by Hamas. So those same people have given money to Tom Emmer because they expect him to be on their side, and 117 Republicans voted for him. Now those 117 Republicans voted for Mike Johnson. I kind of poses a question there. Now, supposedly Kevin McCarthy had been pulling strings with the hope of having all nominees refused until eventually they just put him back into power. So maybe when Matt Gaetz exposed the plan in public, they decided not to play along lest they risk their jobs, as if a Tom Emmer vote wasn't enough for that. But it certainly wasn't anything as so noble as realizing they have been deceived and manipulated. You don't join Congress unless you want to be deceived and manipulated and chuck your principles out the window. And yeah, it's understandable because, frankly, that's the only way to get any group of 435 people to agree on something, or even any group of 218 people if you just want the bare minimum for a majority. So, and this, the lobbyists, too, where were they on this one? It seemed like they swarmed Capitol Hill to get them not to vote for Jim Jordan. You think those same lobbyists would have said, oh, by the way, we'll also only accept this nominee, this guy, and this guy, and this guy as nominees, right? So why did they drop the ball on this thing, too, to get Mike, and that allowed Mike Johnson to slip through? Was it really that much of a screw-up on their part? We don't know. There's a lot of stuff we're going into this show not knowing this week. What did the FBI know about the main shooter? Did the lobbyists and all that want Mike Johnson, or did they just accidentally let him get on through? And we don't know also why 117 Republicans who wanted a Soros spokesperson as House Speaker suddenly decided to go with someone on like the complete opposite end of the political spectrum. It's kind of... If only we had crystal balls and telepathy, right? Then we'd know what everyone was thinking. But I do want to get also back to this gun control topic here from the opening segment, because again, in case you missed the opening segment, this mass shooter, he had been committed to a mental institution because of flights of fancy about shooting up places and hearing voices in his head telling him to do such. So. You know, there are states, conservative states even, that have red flag laws that would have made it harder for him to buy a gun, or at least had someone watching over him a little bit, or at least kept him in the mental institution a little longer, maybe. But, you know, there's questions as to how he was let out and why he was let out when he was let out. So, despite all that, Maine, on the other hand, is a Democrat state, so you'd think the laws would have been a little bit stricter, right? You know, again, Maine's representation in Congress indicates it's a Democrat state, with their only Republican Senator Susan Collins having a more liberal voting record than one of their Democrat congressmen. And, of course, the governor being a Democrat as well. So that's, Democrats really have that state on a real strong foothold in that state. So with all that, how did their stringent gun laws not account for, or at least the stringent gun laws that Democrats keep saying we need, why weren't they implemented in Maine? Why was this guy allowed to have a firearm at all after he was committed over the summer for fantasies about killing people? It's a bizarre situation. Did the paperwork get lost, or did someone deliberately burn it? Because, again, the FBI, I mentioned in the opening segment, they are prone to radicalizing people and letting them boil over to commit a mass shooting or something if it suits their agenda, or if they are trying to prevent a crime and they just weren't competent enough to stop it before it happens. Because the FBI does, like I said in the opening segment, starting in 2001, they went from catching people to trying to prevent crime, and the best way to do that is to make up the crime yourself and then arrest someone that you coax into doing it. That's the only surefire means of success, and it's a tried-and-true FBI tactic that they've done many, many times over the past 20 years. But as far as the gun control situation goes, well, their usual arguments won't exactly work here, because according to the left's usual arguments, Maine really dropped the ball on this one and should have confiscated the guns or whatever already. So their usual gun control arguments won't work. They're probably going to try and say, oh, we'll just ban the weapon instead in case we're not competent enough to do their job. I guess that's the argument they have to use at this point. You know, ban AR-style weapons because, well, our mental health, our gun laws, we're just not good enough at enforcing them. So because we can't do our job, we have to deprive you, the citizen, of your rights. That's a heck of an argument, but I'm sure you'll hear it. Unfortunately, someone's incompetence should be grounds for you losing your rights. That's a really terrible thing to hear, but you'll hear it. And Democrats themselves, though, are quite hypocritical on this issue of who gets to own firearms. For example, you have Congresswoman Cori Bush, who recently is best known for siding with Hamas as they commit genocidal atrocities against Jews. Well, she's one of the ones who says that she deserves private security because of threats against her life. And, well, not even threats against her life. She just said she's so important that she deserves private security, whereas you should abolish the police for everyone else. She has said that. She was asked about why she about abolishing the police while having private security, and she her answer was, "I'm important enough that I need private security." That's it. So that's what these people think when they say abolish the police, right? So she also wants to, you know, disarm the citizenry, ban the Second Amendment. The same, yet again, guns for everyone except her, or at least the people guarding her. It's very peculiar, that kind of thinking there. Why would someone who is so altruistic, as Democrats say, they're just concerned about lives, well, why then would you want to ban guns for everyone except the people around you? What are you planning there, buddy? Why do you get to keep your shooting irons while everyone else loses them? Why are you trying to disarm everyone who's resisting you? Well, we can kind of see through this argument, actually, because, well, it turns out that Democrats tend to think that the only people who should die are the ones they decide die. For example, Kyle Rittenhouse. The people who were trying to murder Kyle Rittenhouse with guns, mind you, did the Democrats turn into heroes, martyrs. They were armed, and they were felons. They shouldn't have had guns, some of them. But that didn't matter to Democrats, that they were heroes for trying to kill a conservative. So we've seen what they think. That was on display nationwide during the Kyle Rittenhouse trial and leading up to it. We saw how Democrats truly felt about who should have a gun. It's okay for felons to have guns if they're trying to kill conservatives, but God forbid a conservative have a gun to protect himself from Democrats that want to kill him. That's what the thrust of the situation was. So they made it clear what they feel and why they feel that they should have guns and you shouldn't. Why? And that brings into question then every response that they have to mass shootings like this tragic one in Maine, where they come out saying gun control, when their own gun control in their own state failed. So, like, did they let it happen just so they could have the publicity there to get to drive their gun ban? I wouldn't put it past them. They certainly don't value life very much, do they, when they cheer for the people trying to murder somebody? And it's not the only time, the Rittenhouse situation, it's not the only time they cheered for the murderers either, or attempted murderers in that case. Recall that in Austin, Texas, there was a Black Lives Matter guy who pulled an assault rifle, one of the assault-style weapons that Democrats want to ban. This Black Lives Matter protester pointed it in the face of a conservative. The conservative shot him dead because, well, what else do you do when you have a gun in your face? Democrats said that the conservative should get the death penalty for, or life in prison anyway, for murder, because he dared to protect himself from a liberal with a gun pointing it at him. And really, your rioters and other such folks in the streets like we saw in 2020, they're not as effective at forcing people to vote the way you want them to vote if the citizens are armed and able to resist them. So if the only people who have guns are your own private security and your own rioters who illegally own the guns, well, then suddenly you start winning races and elections and you can just do whatever the heck you want. And that seems to be an insidious part of this, the part that the Democrats aren't actually telling you about, especially the radical ones, where that, I guess that's the real intent behind it. It makes sense. It's entirely logical and consistent with the situation, assuming they're just not insane. So, again, the same people, everyone should be free from prisons, murderers and rapists included, except for the Trump supporters, those kind of people, because you've seen how they've done with the January Sixers, right? They're the ones who say that they want to disarm society and have their own private security. It just looks like they just want to create chaos in the streets and then come about to promote order themselves. Who knows what schemes are going on in their heads. And they're just going to use this mass shooting to promote their lies and all that sort of thing, because that's what they do. They use fear and intimidation. I mean, that's why they want to disarm you, so they can continue using fear and intimidation in order to get you to vote the way they want you to vote. or to just abolish elections at that point, because why bother if your armed mobs control the streets? Anyway, more Silk or Joe Show coming up after this break.
AI technology is going to have a profound benefit for all of society, but in particular, it will have a beneficial impact for small businesses. In fact, a new report by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce looked at the impact of technology on small business. And what we found was that 1/4 of small businesses are already using AI, with 40% looking to use it in the future. Some of those uses will be marketing and promotions, or helping small businesses communicate with customers and find new customers in the future. We see a 12% jump between businesses that use AI and those that don't in terms of a likelihood of profitability. But when it comes to technology at large, 75% of small businesses say that tech helps them compete with larger companies. It's also important that we get risk-based regulation to help small businesses understand the rules of the road, but help individuals trust this new technology that will benefit us all. If you want to learn more about the work at the U.S. Chamber on Technology, or our new Responsible AI Business Leadership Initiative, please visit us at uschamber.com.
Did you know that 119 billion pounds of food is wasted in the U.S. each year? Meanwhile, 10% of our population lives with food insecurity daily. Brent Fielder, Senior Director of Corporate Social Responsibility for Chick-fil-A, explains how the restaurant company donates its extra food to feed those in need.
Chick-fil-A Shared Table is an initiative that redirects surplus food from Chick-fil-A restaurants across the United States and Canada to local soup kitchens, shelters, food banks, and nonprofits in need. By utilizing Chick-fil-A's extra food to help those in need in local communities, Chick-fil-A Shared Table supports our company's sustainability goal to divert 25 million pounds of food waste from landfills by 2025. To help inspire others to get involved and minimize food waste in their own homes, Chick-fil-A has released its first ever free digital cookbook featuring recipes from our nonprofit partners, which encourages at-home cooks to repurpose extra ingredients in their own kitchens.
To view the Extra Helpings digital cookbook, go to extrahelpings.com.
As the Biden administration mulls banning menthol cigarettes, critics warn it would increase crime and empower cartels. Here's former Arizona law enforcement officer Joby Dickinson.
Our southern border faces serious problems, and a proposed ban on menthol cigarettes would make them worse. Cartels have smuggled illegal drugs like fentanyl for years. Adding menthol cigarettes to their list of products puts more money in their pockets. Stronger cartels make for a weaker America. Oppose the federal menthol ban.
Sponsored by the Border Security Alliance.
The March of Dimes and HCA Healthcare are committed to the best possible start for every baby. I'm Amy Casseri, Vice President of HCA Women and Children's Services, where we have the honor of delivering over 200,000 babies a year. We partner with the March of Dimes on research and fundraising to help build a brighter future for babies everywhere. So march with us on one of the many HCA teams assembled nationwide. Learn more at marchforbabies.org/HCA.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste.
but get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe sitting in with you all today, wrapping up the news of the day with you all. Perhaps waiting for a guest, perhaps not. We'll see how that goes. I would never admit to it unless someone actually showed up. Anyway, so I've been talking this entire show about this. Maybe I sound conspiratorial, but in today's environment, how could you not? About just this mass shooting in Maine that's been going on. It went on already. People died. That's horrible. And our thoughts and prayers and to the, go to the victims and, you know, look for legitimate organizations to donate to that would help out if there are any at this point. It's a little early for that, in my opinion. Anyway, though, I've been talking about how the system has failed in trying to, in preventing this from happening. This guy who was institutionalized and probably shouldn't have had a gun, I'm not entirely certain how accurate the Maine laws are, and we've heard conflicting stories. You know, did he walk himself into the institution when he heard the voices in his head telling him to kill, or was he committed as the police said he was? We don't know exactly yet. We're still in the fog of war sort of environment right now. But either way, there are many states where there are red flag laws, and we heard a guest earlier mention conservative states had red flag laws where, under regardless of which circumstance it is, this guy at least would have been checked, you know, before he was allowed to purchase another gun, or at least someone would have checked out his house and maybe confiscated his firearms when he did check himself in for these horrific thoughts that led to this tragedy. So, with all that, that begs the question, this, with all the clamoring Democrats do for gun control, why is it that in Democrat-ran Maine, they don't have the laws in place that would have prevented this? Even when conservative states like Texas have laws in place that would have could have prevented this, it kind of makes you wonder, were the laws actually in place in Maine and just ignored? And if so, why did they ignore them? Well, we see this sort of situation play out in Chicago, for example, where, you know, Democrats, what they do is they'll claim that these felons who get guns and shoot people up, they just go to another state with looser gun control laws and buy their firearms there and then return to Chicago with them to commit their crimes. But the problem with that sort of reasoning is, how many of those shooters do you think aren't criminals already? Okay? A lot of times it's just gang members shooting each other, so they're bound to have a record. Right? At that point, it can't just be you have the one clean guy in the whole neighborhood just go out and buy a bunch of firearms. No, these guys are just getting them illegally off the street. But instead of handling that problem, the Democrats are just saying, oh, well, it's this entire other scheme, in fact. So they just go to another state where, I don't know, they don't check for felonies, which is impossible because everyone does a federal background check. So it's just kind of stupid. They just let these things happen and don't take responsibility for their own failings that lead to them. And it's disturbing, too, when they start saying that the solution is actually more laws. It's like they deliberately drop the ball on these on gun control so that there can be mass shootings, so that they can demand more and more laws until eventually you're just left disarmed entirely, not even allowed to have a flintlock pistol from 1600 to defend yourself with. So it wouldn't surprise me if Democrats did that. That is a rather tried-and-true tactic. You know, if you want stricter laws, you just don't enforce the laws you have already. It's very logical to do. And, liberals, they do want their lynch mobs and tyrannical governments to face no resistance from an armed citizenry. We've seen that as well. So, anyway, pivoting to our current guest who's shown up, and not sure how much I talked over him, we have Dr. Salvatore J. Giorgiani. He is on about a totally different topic than what we've been covering. He's a senior science advisor to the Men's Health Network and a past chair and or chair emeritus of the American Public Health Association and former Alumni Association board member of Columbia University School of Public Health. Dr. Giorgiani, always happy to talk with you. It's been a little while. How are you today?
I am fine. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right. Cool. Well, glad to have you on the show today. I've got to ask, you're talking about how the FDA, they've got this, it's a question of if they should pull these new COVID vaccines from the marketplaces after we're learning about contamination, seizures, myocarditis. What's going on with all this?
Well, I think what we're seeing is the influence of social media panic as opposed to real hard evidence. There's nothing that I've read, and I read things about this constantly all the time, that would warrant pulling such an important product from the market. Yes, there are side effects to the vaccine. They are similar to side effects that we see with every vaccine. The amount of good that they do, particularly and most importantly in individuals who have underlying medical conditions, is incalculable and certainly outweighs any shouldn't give any reason to pull them from the market. So I think my recommendation is, particularly for individuals, whether they be children, adults, or older individuals, if you have underlying conditions that predispose you to severe infections from COVID or flu for that matter, you really need to have a conversation with your healthcare provider about whether those vaccines are important for you. They'll know your underlying medical conditions, they'll know the environment in your area, and they'll have the ability to make a personal decision of whether vaccination is good for you. But pulling them off the market is certainly not an appropriate thing to think about.
And do you think in part this panic that we're seeing is just comes from how these vaccines have been sold and how there just hasn't been a conversation about side effects, you know, to the point where, what was it, 2021, where this one celebrity reported that their cousin suffered a side effect from the vaccine and Dr. Fauci himself tried to call the celebrity and say, no, that's a total lie? Because like it seems like there's just been this taboo about discussing the possibility the vaccines has side effects, at least until recently. So just sort of ingrained in our psyche that if you experience something, then maybe it can't be related to the vaccine. So suddenly, when you start hearing the conversation about it, you start going, and the pendulum swings in the opposite direction.
Well, you know, you put your finger on an extremely important point here. The biggest side effect of this vaccine is the discussion in the way that the communications was garbled and mishandled by the federal government and too many scientists. Science, medicine is an art and a science. It's not just a science.
All right, Dr. Giorgiani, appreciate being on the Silk Road Joe to talk about this. And listeners, unfortunately, we are out of time. Sorry we had trouble getting the doctor on the program earlier. Could have had a longer conversation, but alas, that's what happens, you know. Sometimes we have problems with the studio line, you know, the cell phones don't show it or whatever. They got the number blocked because, you know, cell phone companies, I guess they're in on it. They don't want you to hear the expert's opinions of our guests. Anyway, what it shouldn't be blocked, though, is our website, mainstreetradio.com, and our social media page, Getter, GETTR.com, at Silker Joe Show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.